Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man produced plentifully, and he thought to himself, 'What shall I do, for I have nowhere to store my crops?' And he said, 'I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you've prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God."
Anna, thanks very much indeed for reading for us. Please do keep that page in Luke's Gospel open. It's lovely to see you again. Thank you very much for your welcome speaking at the Wallgate Talks again today. Now imagine the scene. It's the retirement party of the year, held in a glittering venue with a fantastic view right across the City of London. He'd been to one of the best universities. He'd achieved top marks in his professional exams. He was one of the youngest ever to have been made partner in his firm, and he'd reaped the rewards of his success. And now, at the age of 55, he is looking forward to retirement. And as he admires the wonderful views across the city, he thinks to himself, life has been good. A fabulous house in the right part of London, a large pension pot which will secure his future for many years to come. He's looking forward to spending time with his wife and his family, dividing his months between London and the south of France. Yes, he says to himself, life has been good. I've done well. There is ample stored up for the future. The next thing he knows is a searing pain ripping through his chest, and he is dead before the medics arrive. The following week, there's an obituary in the Times. There's a memorial service attended by influential city people and moving appreciations. But there is another verdict on this man's life, which no one heard. You fool. God's verdict. It's a shocking story, but actually it's just the story that we've heard from the lips of Jesus in Luke chapter 12. I guess it's shocking because we would look at this man and we would say of him, his life has been successful. But God says, you fool. His life looked so right, but actually he had got it very wrong indeed. In fact, he had made a complete failure out of his success. That is the title of today's talk, How to Make a Failure of Success. And I simply want to ask the question, why? What did he get wrong? And you'll see there's an outline on the back of the notice sheet. First of all, how to make a failure of success? Well, first of all, live as if there's no God. I'm sorry this microphone seems to be fading in and out, but hopefully you can hear it nonetheless. First of all, then, live as if there's no God. Verses 20 and 21, just at the end there. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. Now, it's interesting, isn't it? We're not really told that much about this man. We don't know whether he was good or bad. We don't know whether he was lazy or industrious. We don't know whether he was a faithful husband or a womanizer. We don't know whether he was religious or secular. All we know from that last sentence is that he was not rich towards God. I take it he may have acknowledged God in some way. He may have acknowledged God exists, God's existence. He may even, I take it, have been a churchgoer. But he ignores God in terms of day-to-day life. And that is the thing that tips the balance for him. In other words, he lives his life as if God isn't there. Just look again at verse 16. The land of a rich man produced plentifully, and he thought to himself, "What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops." Well, it's a wonderful problem to have, isn't it? And he comes up with a solution. Verse 18, he says, "I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I'll say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry.'" And the striking thing, of course, in all his planning is that God isn't mentioned once. Indeed, it's the most striking thing, I think, as he kind of thinks to himself and makes his plans to himself, the most striking thing is the repetition of "I" and "what I will do." As he plans his life around what he wants, God doesn't get a look in at all. Now, it's a common mistake to live as if God isn't there, but it's also a foolish mistake because God is there. It's why elsewhere the Bible says it's the fool who says in his heart that there is no God. Because God is there, and God has made himself known. It's this attitude that is at the very heart of what the Bible calls sin. In other words, to live in God's world as if he isn't there. I guess when we hear the word sin, we probably think that we have a front page of the tabloid newspapers or something like that. And we immediately think to ourselves, well, you know, it's other people who are the sinners. But actually, Jesus Christ says all of us are. It's his diagnosis, if you like, of what is wrong with humanity. In other words, it's not just the angry atheists like a sort of Richard Dawkins who come into the category of sinners who live as if God isn't there. No, it's the wise investor in our story in Luke chapter 12. I guess it's all of us, if we're honest with ourselves, who live without any meaningful reference to God. It's what all of us are by nature like.
Keep talking, I'll
sort it. Oh, excellent. Good. Okay. But I guess that all begs the question, doesn't it? Well, how do I know that God exists? How do I know that God is there? Well, simply because he has made himself known. We thought a little bit about this last week, so if you missed the talk last week, do listen to it online. Jesus Christ was God on earth, God with flesh and bones, fully man and fully God. In other words, if you and I had been alive, not in 21st century London, but in 1st century Israel, then we could have seen God. We could have listened to him. But perhaps someone else says, well, hang on a moment, wasn't Jesus Christ simply a religious leader or a good teacher? Well, no. In fact, that is the very mistake that the other man makes in this whole story here that we had read, the one who asks Jesus the question in the first place. Have a look at verse 13, and hopefully we got some new batteries. Have a look at verse 13. Someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made you a judge or arbitrator over you?" Do you see how he thinks of Jesus? He just treats Jesus as a sort of petty judge in the small claims court. And yet, of course, Jesus Christ is so much greater than that. He claimed to be God, and he demonstrated the power of God on earth. He calmed a storm that was terrifying even the most hardened fishermen. He healed the blind, the deaf, the mute. He fed 5,000 people just with a couple of fish and a few loaves of bread. He walked on water. He raised the dead. In other words, Jesus Christ, the Creator, come into his world, and we see him doing all the kinds of things that actually we would expect to see the Creator doing. In other words, God is not playing hide and seek. Now, perhaps for some of us, that's our view of God, that he is playing hide and seek. Now, we're slightly beyond that game with the age of our children. Probably not the kind of game you play with teenagers, but certainly when they were younger, it is a terrific game playing hide and seek. As you count to 10, and already you can hear the squeals of delight from behind the curtain, and you then say, "Are you hiding behind the sofa?" And again, more squeals of delight from behind the curtain. If you've never played it, it's not difficult. So do try it out. But you see, God is not playing hide and seek that we have to go looking for him. Nor is God some kind of impersonal force or power who is completely unknowable and can't communicate. No, he has come to earth in the person of Jesus Christ. Which means, of course, that to read about Jesus in the Gospels, in the Gospel accounts, as we are doing this lunchtime, is to read about the acts of God himself. To hear the words of Jesus, as we are this lunchtime, is to hear the words of God himself. As such, Jesus exposes the lies of our culture, because, of course, the other mistake which the man in the crowd makes is there in verse 15. As Jesus says to him, "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of one's possessions." In other words, this man, you see, as we look at him, he is a visual aid of how to miss the point of life. You know, life is not like some TV game show where the whole point of it is just to gather together for oneself as much stuff as possible. And the rich fool in the story makes the same point. From a human perspective, of course, he does what is entirely natural and right. He doesn't squander his wealth on a celebrity lifestyle. He doesn't gamble it all away. In many respects, he is a wise investor. Yet from God's perspective, he is a fool. I think it's just worth asking ourselves, how would we define success for ourselves, you know, as we go about life? How do we think of success? I guess for some of us, success will be defined in terms of the expectations of other people, you know, perhaps of friends or family or parents, or perhaps the expectations of colleagues. Certainly where we live in our little corner of South London, there are very clear markers of what the successful person looks like. So it's getting the right exam results, it's having children who are going to the right kind of university, securing the right kind of job, living with the right postcodes, getting children, you know, successfully following in our own wake. It's having a pension pot which is quietly accumulating in the background. And Jesus says, you see, so very strikingly, you can have all of that and more and make a complete failure of your success. Notice, will you, what Jesus isn't saying. He's not saying that success is bad. Some of us perhaps have a view of God, and we imagine him to be like a rather sort of strict head teacher. And that, you know, whenever we begin to enjoy ourselves, God is there ready to say, "Stop it." But no, God is not some kind of cosmic killjoy. He's the creator. He's given us his creation to enjoy. Indeed, there are plenty of people in the Bible who are successful. No, the problem with success isn't that success is bad. It's that success blinds. It blinds us to what is important in life. It causes us to miss out on what really matters. That is the first way to make a failure of success. To live as if there's no God. The second way is to live as if there's no judgment. Have a look again at the very last two sentences, verses 20 and 21. But God said to him, "Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. I'll just take my watch off to get back to the office when you need to. Now, can you see, looking at those verses again, that ultimately this guy failed to understand that actually his life was not his own? Can you see that? He failed to grasp and to really appreciate and to act upon the fact that he is accountable. And therefore, although he makes plans for the future, the tragedy, of course, is that he doesn't plan far enough. He doesn't plan far enough. Now, he may have believed in the afterlife. We don't know. But what he doesn't do is that he doesn't plan for it. And therefore, you see, he moves out into eternity completely unexpectedly and completely unprepared. And all his wonderful plans that he's made for the future, at a stroke, are rendered irrelevant. Because to lose one's soul is to lose everything. What is the Lord Jesus saying? He's saying that death is not the end. And although the idea of there being a judgment day is deeply unpopular in our culture, will you just think for a moment about the alternative? Imagine a God who doesn't care. Imagine a God who is indifferent to our world. A God who doesn't care about right and wrong. That would be far worse, wouldn't it? You see it all the time, don't you, the newspapers and discussions and so on. All of us, I think, have a deeply ingrained desire for justice. You know, whether it's justice for the victims of the Grenfell Tower fire, or whether it's justice for the victims of knife crime, or whether it's justice, you know, for whichever side of the Brexit debate you are on. I'm not going to say more about Brexit for obvious reasons. I'll get into very hot water one way or the other. But, you know, we want, don't we? We want governments to act justly. And I take it on the final day, we want God to act justly as well. We don't want a God, do we, who's going to turn a blind eye, a God who doesn't care, a God who doesn't distinguish between good and evil. And therefore, the reason that Jesus tells us this story is as a warning. And of course, like all warnings, it is an act of kindness, so that we can take action and not make the foolish mistake of living as if this world is all there is. But you say, how can we know? How can we know there's going to be a judgment? I mean, is there anything more to go on other than Jesus' parable here? Well, I take it, given the fact that it's from the words of the lips of Jesus, the parable itself would be enough. But have a look as well at the facts of history, the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. Because although Jesus was a figure of history, he wasn't a figure of history in the same way that Napoleon was, or Julius Caesar was, or someone like that, who lived and then died, and then that was it. Rather, 3 days later, after his crucifixion, he was raised again to life, never to die again. And that is a complete game changer. It changes everything. Just imagine for a moment that this world in which we live is like a giant waiting room, a kind of much bigger version, if you like, of a doctor's surgery. And at one end, there's a door marked death, at one end of the waiting room. And through all the tragedies and disasters of life, as people die, we see people young and old, men, women, individuals and groups, one by one, heading through that door marked death. And, of course, they never return. In other words, what you and I desperately need is for someone to come back through the door and tell us what's on the other side. Rather like the early explorers when they discovered the New World, America. For many years, people had speculated about whether there was some great landmass on the other side of what we call the Atlantic Ocean. They'd gone in search of it. People had never returned. Until that was March 1493, Christopher Columbus did return. And at that point, there was certainty. And it's just the same with death. We need an expert. You and I need someone who has gone through death, who has come back out the other side, and is able to tell us what it's all about. And the one person to have done that is Jesus Christ. Which means, of course, that in God's great kindness, he has not left us to be sort of guessers, so to speak, about the future. He has not left us to be guessers about the judgment to come. If Jesus didn't rise from the dead, then he is still dead, and there's nothing beyond the grave. And we'd have to change, I guess, the title of this talk from The Rich Fool, or the title of the story Jesus tells there in the Bible, from The Rich Fool to The Rich Wise Man. Because actually this would be the wise way to live, wouldn't it? If this life is all there is. As the New Testament says elsewhere, if the dead are not raised, let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. Remarkably similar to the words of this man in verse 19. Relax, eat, drink, be merry. But if Jesus Christ did rise from the dead, then that changes everything. It means that he is Lord and King now. It means that he will return on the final day, just as he said he would. And it means there will be a day of judgment, just as he says there will be. But perhaps you're thinking to yourself, well, hang on a moment. What's it mean to be rich towards God? That is where the story finishes, isn't it, in the last verse there. What's it mean to be rich towards God? Well, certainly what it doesn't mean is trying to buy God off. You know, perhaps by going to church or giving to charity. Now, I take it that being rich towards God is doing precisely what this man failed to do. It's recognising that God is God. It's recognising that God is the one to whom we have to give an account. It's recognising that all of us fall short. And then it's doing what we see people elsewhere in Luke's Gospel doing. It is turning to Jesus Christ, the one who died on a cross, so we can be forgiven our sins, so we can be in the right with God, so that we can be at peace with God, both in this life now, but supremely, and more importantly, in the world to come as well, and then to start following Jesus as Lord. Let me finish by addressing three groups of people. Firstly, the sceptical. And these talks are very much designed for everyone, so if you're sceptical here this lunchtime, then we're glad you are here. But can you perhaps begin to see what the issue is? The real issue is, who is Jesus that he speaks on these issues with such authority? And if you've ever really asked that question and done so as an adult, then we'd love you to do so. Do take away a copy of Luke's Gospel. You can take away that for free and go away and read it. And read it, just ask yourself the question, who is this man who speaks with such authority? Alternatively, on the notice sheet there are details of a Christianity Explored coming up after after Easter. It's a course which is put on by churches up and down the country. It's a great way to consider the claims of Jesus Christ. Secondly, there will be those of us who are followers of Jesus Christ already. Notice, will you, in the next part of Luke's Gospel, in verses 22 to 34, notice, will you, that Jesus applies this parable to us. Have a look at verse 22. And he said to his disciples, "Therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat, nor about your body, what you will put on. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothing." And again in verse 30, "For all the nations of the world seek after these things, and your Father knows that you need them. Instead, seek his kingdom, and these things will be added to you." What is Jesus saying? Don't slip into thinking like the rich fool. I take it, for many of us, that will be a massive danger. You know, we're paid huge amounts of money. We're working and living in a culture which is all about how much stuff you have. Instead, says Jesus, we are to seek first his kingdom. Thirdly, there may well be one or two, and in a sense you identify with the rich man in this parable perfectly, and you're saying to yourself, yes, I recognise I'm living for myself. You may even be saying, what a fool I have been. Perhaps you're someone, you've been thinking about the claims of Jesus Christ for some time, and you recognise that now is the time when actually you need to do what this man never did, and that is to put your trust in Jesus. And if you'd like to do that, I'd love to chat to you afterwards, or do talk to Claire or Phil or a friend or Christian colleague that you have here. Well, I'm going to draw stumps. Do please hang around for as long as you are able to. I don't know if there's more food. Yeah, there is more food, so if you missed out on food early on, then there's more food. And we'd love to see you at these the two following talks, next Wednesday and the Wednesday after, in the rest of this series in the run-up to Easter. Thanks so much.